Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So the next couple of episodes, I'm going to be talking around a piece at Venice Immersive called 1968. It was part of the competition. So I'm going to be first speaking to the audio director, the Massimiliano Borghese, who is based there in Italy, in Venice, and is working on all the different spatial dimensions of this piece. And so Rose Bond is an animator, and so she is creating this animation that originally was here in Portland, Oregon, and it was supposed to be during the pandemic and shown, but then she had all these animations that then she's able to put into these different short films. And so she's taking different slices of these animations that were exploring the different protests from 1968, this resistance towards the structures of power, trying to move towards these aspects of liberation. And so that's very driven by the music that's there, but also it's a spatial audio mix of this kind of orchestral performance. And so last year they had Earth's to Come, which was taking these performance from like a cappella group, and they're able to kind of spatialize each of the individual voices, but to take like an orchestral arrangement, which usually when you hear the symphony or orchestra, everyone's in the front, but if you have all the speakers all around you, then how do you start to mix it in a very particular way? And so they got access to a very specific piece of music. And there's a geodesic dome where you sit in these seats and you put on a VR headset. And so you see the visuals of this projected onto this infinite space where it's not constrained by having the visuals only limited by the dome. But if you're in the dome, they would have to choose as to whether or not they wanted to prioritize the visuals or the sound. And so they end up prioritizing the sound. So the sense that the sound is coming in this kind of spatial mix, and they added more speakers into this room. So it's kind of like a frontier of spatial audio in this dome performance, but you're each individually wearing a VR headset to have the most high fidelity experience without having to have the nuances of a sweet spot to be in a good or bad place. Basically, everybody gets the same visual experience. And then audio, you get kind of like this whole spatial sound field that's being created. And so I talk all about the process of creating that with Massimiliano. And in the next episode, I'll be talking to Rose Bond about the specific content in the process of creating the actual immersive experience. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Massimiliano happened on Thursday, August 25th, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, I'm Massimiliano Borghese. You can call me Max. I'm a sound designer, and I started working in immersive in 2016 when I was studying at Leeds Beckett University in Leeds, England. And then I came across some videos on YouTube which were like with immersive sound, and I started digging into it. I discovered ambisonics, and I started experimenting with some ambisonics microphone at the university. And for my master thesis, I did a few projects. One of them was recording an opera immersively, both with ambisonic mics and with usual mics or spot mics, and then mixing it in ambisonics and marrying it with 360 video. And I was lucky enough to collaborate on a project that won Biennale College in 2018, which was In the Cave by Ivan Gergolet. And so I did the production immersive audio for that project, and then the post-production too. And that led me onto other evolutions of immersive sound. So I worked on a VR game where you were a wizard throwing spells with your hand gestures. And so I did all the sound for that. And I wasn't happy with the implementation of it. So I went on and studied game audio and the integration with middleware so I could take care of everything. And then in 2020, I collaborated with Vaillant VR, which was the project that won Biennale College in 2020, which was supposed to be an installation of VR, but COVID came, so we turned the experience into a full headset experience. It's an interactive experience, so I think spatial sound was a very important part of that. And years kept going, and I kept collaborating with other projects in VR, both linear, immersive, 3DOF, 6DOF, and until this year in Venice Immersive, where I did the immersive sound mix for 1968, which is an animation-based VR project by Rose Bond, with the beautiful music of composer Intifigis Wisweta, played by the Attacca Quartet, which they won Best Performance at Biennale Music last year in 2024. And basically we had to marry this composition, this music, which was pre-existing, with the visuals that Rose created and animated. So we went on and did some editing, layering, and a great part of it to create the immersive feeling and to move the sound together with the image and also expand the image into the sound was done in the immersive mix. This experience is peculiar, I would say, because it's one of the very few experiences that you utilize speakers to reproduce the immersive sound rather than headphones. The immersive sound is reproduced by a sound dome that uses 15 speakers inside the dome, one subwoofer, and four additional speakers that are placed around the room and that are reflecting the sound from bouncing from the wall just to create an additional layer of the space where the sound is resonating. And so, yeah, that's pretty it. That's the journey so far.
Yeah, and you talked about a number of the projects that you've worked on, but I'm curious to hear a bit more around your training, your background that you're bringing into this, but also, like, what was the initial spark of interest to move more and more deeper into this realm of immersive audio? So, yeah, a bit more around your training, your background, and then also this catalyst into immersive.
Well, my undergraduate is in psychology. While I was studying psychology at university, I kind of like wasn't very happy with how the training was done, how the lectures and how the approach that was chosen, which was very like cognitive, scientific based. And I've always been in love with theater. So after completing my undergraduate in psychology, I went on to an acting academy. So I did that for a couple of years. And then when I graduated from the academy, I started working in theater. I wasn't sure to get enough job as an actor because it's like, you're pretty lucky if you manage to live only doing acting. So I went on and studied sound because I wanted to work in theater no matter what kind of job. I just love being in the theater. But then I was lucky enough to actually work as an actor for almost 10 years in Italy, touring with shows. And on the side, I was also running a small independent company where we were producing independent theater shows. And some of them were immersive, and some of them utilized sound. And I was taking care of that aspect of the production. And that led me to, after 10 years of this experience, I wanted to go abroad and have an abroad experience. So I went to the UK. I didn't know what to do. I did some few random jobs. And then I decided, okay, sound is actually like my very first passion. And I think I could turn that into a profession. So that's when I decided to do the sound design master degree at the Leeds Beckett. And while I was studying there, they hosted this immersive concert with 40 speakers surrounding, just on the horizontal plane, surrounding the audience. And that was an experience so powerful. I had some oral hallucinations. So I could actually feel the sound with my body and perceive the sound coming like right in front of me, even though if the speakers were meters and meters apart and away from me. That was a moment that sparked my interest in it. And I decided I want to work with this media, to experiment with this. And so I started digging into it, digging into the theory and experimenting. And I created a group of ambisonic enthusiasts at the university with other professors and other students. And we were gathering and testing out equipment and testing out techniques. And then I just kept working on that. And I got into other formats because, as you know well, spatial audio is actually could be as many formats and could be delivered with many media. So it could be on headphones, binauralized, externalized, play over speakers. It could be ambisonics, Dolby Atmos, multi-channel speaker arrays. So I kind of like, I wanted to test all of them. And for this very project, the one that we are showing here at Venice Immersive, we tested and we decided upon a different speakers layout. So it's something that was like new to us. So the speakers are not equally distributed across the space. But there are many more speakers like in front of the audience, because most of the action is actually, most of the visuals are happening in front of you. So we wanted to have like more resolution, more spatial audio resolution in front of you. And then we decided to add some speakers on the outer layers, outside the dome, because that was something that we were missing. We wanted to sound it bigger than actually it is. So, yeah.
Just a quick follow-on, because I know with Earth to Come, it's using a very similar setup that you have this year versus last year. And so last year, did you also have those four external speakers, or is that something that you added this year?
No, last year we didn't have the four external speakers, and we had equally distributed speakers around the listening positions, around the audience. Because last year we were dealing with eight individual voices, human voices, so we decided to have eight speakers on the horizontal plane, so we could start the experience by having each voice played by one speaker. And then as the visuals progress and as the experience evolves and moves around the space, these voices start to fly around and to come towards you and move in space. And then we added six speakers on the top layer and one speaker right 90 degrees above you. So like the voice of God speaker plus the subwoofer. But last year we didn't really use the subwoofer because human voice, like we wanted to preserve the acoustic characteristics of the human voice. So basically the subwoofer wasn't doing much. This year we're playing with orchestral material. So there's an orchestra plus a string quartet. So we can use the subwoofer because we have that content, that audio content, to make the subwoofer work and to try to give back the feeling of the timpani hits and the double bass and all those like low frequencies that we can actually deliver through the subwoofer.
Yeah, I know that there's a bit of a difference between using something like Dolby Atmos or like Unity or Unreal Engine, where it's very object-oriented based, where you would have a speaker that's XYZ coordinates in space, and then you would have, you know, it's all blended together within the context of like binaural speakers on the context of the VR headset that is tracking your head rotation, so you may be able to get some directionality around those positions. But in something like this, it's mostly forward-facing in the sense that most of the action that you're looking at in the VR experiences, both last year and this year, the audience is mostly just looking forward. It's more of a 180 experience. So you get the direction, but there's no audio that's coming from the headset, so all the sound is coming from this external array of speakers. And so what was the strategy in terms of like taking this composition, it's very orchestral, how do you start to translate it into these 15-speaker array and four speakers? How do you start to like break it up and actually deliver it?
Yeah. So comparing to last year, like where we had eight voices, eight isolated voices, we were free to move them as we wanted. Now that we have an orchestra, our learned audio experience of an orchestra is basically in theaters. So we tend to place the orchestra in a space which is in front of us and possibly like under the stage. So we wanted to reproduce that feeling. So that's why we added more speakers in front of us, because the orchestra basically is staying there while the quartet, the string quartet, so we have violin, second violin, viola and cello, we use them as objects, and so we move them around. And so most of the actions which is happening, actually the visuals are happening in front of you at 180 degrees. When we try to mimic the movement of a car or a bus, we use the sound of the violin, some sounds that the violin created, just to follow the direction of that visual. And that was something different from last year. So we anchored the experience. It was more cinematic, I would say. So the orchestra is playing in front of you, but actually sometimes it's also playing all around you. And we also decided to expand the world of what we see. What we see is that mainly in front of us, but what we hear is all around us. We are immersed in sound at some point, because what we see are memories. And we wanted to accompany this process of being immersed in the memory. And when we visualize the memory, is in front of us, where our eyes are. But when we are remembering the memory in an auditory way, it's all around us, because we hear omnidirectionally. So that's what we try to achieve.
Can you talk a bit about the mechanics of how you're actually spatializing this? You know, the DAW that you're using, if you're using plugins, if you're using any ambisonics at all, or just the strategy for how to recreate the spatial experience of an orchestra with this particular speaker array that you have set up in this dome context?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question for me, a little bit geeky maybe, but so we tried, coming from last year, we tried to use the ambisonic workflow. Because I did already an immersive mix of the experience for the headset only, which was ambisonic based. So we thought, okay, let's just translate that ambisonic mix into this speaker array. It wasn't quite working for us. We weren't happy enough. The sweet spot was a little bit too little.
Meaning you have to kind of be in the center in order to really hear the full effects?
Exactly. If you were sitting like a little bit more on the side of the dome, you would kind of like lose some directivity and the precision of the position of the sounds. So we turned into other kind of panning algorithms. So last year we used Reaper as a DAW, and then we linked it up with Spat Revolution by Flux Immersive, which is a very, very powerful software that can decode your mix to any kind of array of speakers. And we decided to use a panning algorithm, which is based on the vector-based amplitude panning, which to us was the one that sounded the best. But this year, we actually used dual-layer vector-based amplitude panning, which kind of splits the frequencies into low frequencies. They are specialized in one particular panning low frequencies. They are specialized with one panning low, which is amplitude-based. Higher frequencies are specialized using intensity-based specialization. So, okay. So this year we use Pro Tools as a main DAW because the original recording session from the orchestra, they came in Pro Tools, so we kept that. We link it up with Spat Revolution by Flux Immersive to do all the spatialization and the movements of the sound sources. And we also simulated a room. We use a simulation of the reverb, which is a Vienna concert hall, because we wanted to have that feeling of grandness. And on top of that, we used other reverbs. So it's a kind of like mix approach there. And then everything was coming back into Pro Tools. We printed the 16 channels. And then we did some additional work, adding an external audio interface, which was feeding 4 additional speakers outside of the dome. And Pro Tools was sending 16 channels to the dome and 4 channels to the external speakers. And then we printed 16 channels for the dome and 4 channels for the external speakers. And we use Max MSP as a playback device and also allows us to synchronize the headsets with the sound that we're playing. Because, another thing, we approached Showtime VR to do the multiplayer casting of the experience. So all the headsets are linked up and synced to the experience. But the problem is that they never done something with external speakers. So they weren't sure how to be able to synchronize. So we came up with a way, we did some programming to link Max MSP with the sound files and Showtime VR with the syncing of the headset. So with just the press of a button, we were able to start experience for all the audience, both visually and orally.
Yeah, thanks for that. It's really quite a full sound field and really quite impressive. I'm looking forward to hopefully dropping in back again at some point just to listen to it again, just because it was so rich. So you mentioned last year that you had a lot of the spatialization across those 8 voices and that it may have been just like on a horizontal plane, but because you have those 15 speakers, when you think about spatialization and panning algorithms, are you just doing it on a 2D plane of like X, Y coordinates? Or are you also doing height, so like a full 3D spatialization? So yeah, just curious to hear if you're using any height or if it's just all panning across like a 2D plane.
Well, we use a lot of height. So we're playing with the 3 degrees of freedom. And so we play sounds like on the horizontal plane, but also on the vertical plane. So they are placed in a 3D environment. And both experiences, last year and this year, we start on the horizontal plane. And then we gradually introduce the upper layers of speakers. So the sound is gradually moving up. This is important. And this is a decision that came from studying the visuals that we had to work with. Which is happening, yes, in front of you, mainly at 180 degrees, but also they're happening in your whole field of view in front of you. So it's also not just on the horizontal plane, it's not just like a cinema screen, it's much wider and bigger and taller. That means that sometimes some visual objects, some animations, they can come towards you, they can come above you. And so we did the same thing with sound. So the sound is playing on the surface of this hemispherical dome, and actually full spherical dome, but also they come out of the surface and they come inside the dome. And I can tell you a little bit like about the process of how we decided to use the dome in this way, so sonically rather than visually. The first idea, maybe Rose will expand on this. Rose Bond is the main artist. Maybe she can expand on this. But she comes from multi-projections that were projected either onto buildings or onto multiple screens. So she wanted to use a dome for projecting the images, like a planetarium. And that was doable. We did some research, and that was the first direction we were going with. The problem was that since the visuals are actually happening not just on the horizontal plane, but also above you, that kind of visual projection asks for a double layer of screens. So if you want to place an audio source, a speaker, behind the screen, you would have like two layers of plastic blocking the sound. So the spatial audio experience would be ruined by that. So we decided, okay, maybe we can go headphones. But that would be like, you know what, like, I don't think this is like something special. What if we turn the things around and we do the opposite way? We do the visual experience individually in the headset, and we use the dome for the sound. So the audience don't share the same visual space, but they do share the same oral experience. They are sharing the same auditory space. And I think that was a good decision because it kind of like made this experience stand out. And it may be like not the only one, of course, that is using speaker to specialize sound in this way, but it was something new for Venice Immersive too, I would say. So we're very happy with the outcome.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Rose last year and I didn't have anyone representing the sort of sound dimension. So I'm happy to have a chance to talk to you this year. I'm going to be talking to Rose in like 3 days to get more into her side of the story in terms of the overall development of this project. But I'm curious to hear from your perspective in terms of, for one, this collaboration with Rose, but also like as you're designing these audio experiences, if you're able to like have a home studio or headphones, or if you're able to get like a proxy for you to do a first take, but then if you at some point need to actually test it on the system to get what it's actually going to sound like. And so just curious to hear a little bit more around that process of both collaborating with Rose, since you know she's based in the United States and Canada, and then you're in Italy, and so there's this across space and time. And just curious to hear how you are able to either create proxies for Rose to listen to and how you create your own proxies. Yeah, just a little bit more around the workflow for both the director that's working on it with Rose, and but also your own process for designing and mixing these spatial audio pieces.
Yeah, so, well, I'm based in Italy and she's based in the US, so how can we translate this experience and send it across to her? Well, using Ambisonics. And what I did, like, along the way in the process, I was sending her constant updates of the mix encoded in Ambisonics so she could watch the experience in her headset and listen to it on headphones. Of course, it wouldn't be the same thing, but it would be, like, a quite good approximation of what the final experience will look and sound like. This year, actually, after the experience from last year, we spent some time together in the studio. So I collaborate with a studio which is based in Venice, it's Pase Platform. They are an immersive sound studio and they specialize in immersive installations. And they are very experienced in all different techniques that you can utilize for the immersive sound. So what we did in their studio is we recreated the sound dome without the dome structure, but just placing the speakers at the right coordinates and heights and distances. So I went there and I mixed in the dome. And all the mixing was done in the dome because that was like quite different. To do that, I was also monitoring the video in VR in my headset. So I linked up the headset to my computer and I utilized another software to be able to watch in real time the VR experience while I was mixing the sound in the dome with speakers. At the end of the day, when a progress was made, we wrapped everything, we did an ambisonic version of the file, and we sent it over to Rose for reviewing it. This year, we were able to organize a session together with Rose. So Rose was able to come to Venice beforehand and to contribute to the mix with ideas, movements, gestures that she borrows from the animation that she knows so well. Because she comes from cinema and she has a very strong sense of rhythm, pace, and movement. And that is really important for her to communicate to us in order for us to understand what her vision was and how we could replicate that with sound and expand on that with sound. So we did some sessions together and then we started setting up the dome here in Venice as soon as we could. So we came here, well, we were the first team to be on the island and to build our space, to actually acoustically treat the space, which otherwise would be like an empty reverberant room with a very unpleasant acoustic. So we dressed the space with fabrics and piece of cloth, and so we dampened the reverb, and so we were working with a more pleasant space. We built a dome, we put the speakers on the dome, and we started mixing and remixing and fine-tuning and adding the four speakers. Well, the idea of adding the four speakers came like the 2 days before the opening, because we were just like playing it in the space and we felt like, well, maybe we need something different from last year. We need to hear more like you are in a theater. So you're also hearing the reflections of the sound coming from the wall outside of the dome. And that's what we did. We placed the speakers facing the walls and hitting the wall. And so we get also the sound bouncing off the walls and coming back to the audience. So it was very important to work on site and to fine-tune the piece on site. And Rose came 2 days before the opening and she gave us some more directions and then she blessed it and she was happy with it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's really quite rich and full and difficult to really describe completely just because it just felt like I was being bathed in a sound field. That's the best that I could sort of describe it. And, you know, as you were describing, you know, this translation of the orchestra, you know, usually you have physical constraints where the musicians are actually sitting and playing. And so I'm just curious if you're able to create this virtualized mix that is able to play with positionality and space in a way that you're not able to have these sound sources, you know, in physical reality, you're constrained by gravity in a lot of times. And so just curious to hear what kind of insights you've had from being able to create more of a virtualized sound mix of a symphony.
Yeah. Well, we started like by following the disposition of the orchestra, the position of the orchestra, like it is in the real orchestra. So we have like the strings on one side, the horns and flutes on the other side. So everything is kind of like mimicking that position. But then we started playing with it. And so we expanded on that. We made it bigger than life. So at some point, the orchestra is doubled and you hear it also behind you, but very subtly. So you don't actually realize, oh, there's another orchestra playing behind me. No, it's like gradually coming in. So you feel immersed in it. The material we work with wasn't purposefully recorded for immersive. It was just recorded mainly for archiving. And so we had to deal with this to find ways to kind of make it bigger and make it wider. Well, the quartet was recorded separately, so we had clean recordings of the violin, second violin, viola and cello, and same again, when they are playing together, we kind of put them in a position that they would have on the stage. But then that changes and moves slowly, and then they move together with the animations, they go from left to right, from above to the bottom of the dome, so they're moving around. So we did a little bit of editing, a little bit of cleaning the tracks, a little bit of duplicating the tracks, a little bit of layering multiple orchestras and taking pieces from other. So the original composition is 20 minutes long. So we took some piece and the final piece, VR piece, is like around 10 minutes. So we took some pieces that were happening later on in the music, and we layered with other piece of music. So at the same time, you're hearing two sections of the same composition playing at the same time. We managed to get it like harmonically work, and then we added some sweeteners here and there in the sub to make it feel like a little bit bigger, to give it a little bit of oomph, and add some small tiny additional sounds here and there. But those are like very, very, well, hidden in the mix. Just the thing about the space, a feedback that we have last year after playing Earth to Come was that the audience was feeling very well and welcomed and very at ease and in peace in the space we created. And I think it's a very important part of the experience, the actual architectural space that we created. The fact that we used the cloth to dampen the sound, so to make it like feel like there's less echoey, less reverbery. And also coming from a very quite hectic and noisy environment as the Vanissi Immersive Island is, when you go inside our space, you feel like, ah, I can relax here. And that's why every now and then, even though I saw it and I experienced 1968, I would say hundreds of times so far, I just like to go there, sit, and just be in the space and experience it once again, because it just makes me feel in peace with myself.
And it seems like there's like a fog machine in there as well, or there's like layers of fog and then light, and yeah, it's just a whole vibe that you get when you go in there. So yeah, that was really well done. I did want to ask around, there's the emergence of other contexts and platforms for spatial audio, like there's the Sphere in Las Vegas, there's the Cosm that's in LA and Dallas, other locations that are going to be launching. And then also there's like at South by Southwest this year, there's the piece by Andrew Schneider, Now Is When We Are, using the wave field synthesis, staged in a theater that was very dark. The speakers were hidden, so it's a bit of a magic trick. And then you just see these strings of LED lights that are able to then, with the wave field synthesis, like localize the audio into those very specific locations. And so there's also the Shed that's in New York City that has been featuring different spatial audio experiences, and also other places in the UK that are starting to crop up that are featuring different spatial audio installations. So just curious to hear from your perspective some of the things that get you excited in terms of new ways of delivering spatial audio experiences beyond binaural headphones, and what kind of things that you've either been experimenting with or excited in exploring more.
Yeah, well, wave field synthesis is like, it's another level, I think. So it's an experience that like, well, it, technologically, it requires a lot of processing and a lot of power and a lot of speakers. So there are bigger venues that can afford that. For smaller installations and traveling installations, it's harder to do that. But that's something that I would really love to try out and to experiment with, wave field synthesis. Another thing that I've seen so far and that I've seen some experiences are playing with is actually utilizing multiple ways of reproducing sound at the same time. So they use the headphones, or sometimes they can use bone conducting headphones, and at the same time having some speakers in the space, they can reproduce the sound in the space, and they can use the sound coming from the headset itself synchronized with sound coming from the speakers. So I think this is a very interesting way of mixing with the different techniques. And as you see this being done both in a performative way or in the visual world, so you can play with VR, pass-through, XR, tactile, real props, real actors. You can do the same thing with audio. So real actors whispering and talking to you, and sound being played back by open headphones, bone conducting headphones, together with a specialized dome. So I think a next frontier would also be interacting with all these different techniques and playing with them, but doing it in a narrative way. Because I think like it shouldn't be just a display of the technical achievements of the technology, but it should like also always be led by the story that you're trying to tell and what the feeling that you'll try to pass over to the audience, and yes, the world that you try to create. So that's always the goal for any creative in any medium, in immersive, I would say especially. Don't be carried away by the technology, but use the technology for the goal, for what you would like to say.
I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what you think the ultimate potential of this type of frontiers of spatial audio might be and what it might be able to enable.
Well, the ultimate experience would be undistinguishable from real life and also bigger than real life. When I was studying in the UK, they brought us to experience a Dolby Atmos demo in the cinema. That was amazing, but I had a question. How can you recreate proximity? How can you make me feel like the actor is actually talking into my ear or is sitting next to me telling the story in a way that I believe it? So I think that like combining these different techniques, maybe wave field synthesis also the way, married with other techniques of reproducing sound, that would be the ultimate goal of having immersive sound experiences that are not undistinguishable from the reality, but in a way that like you can tell a story that, which is really resonating with you and touching you. Some of the experiences that I like better in the immersive, Venice Immersive, are the experiences that actually don't use immersive technologies, talking about headsets and other technologies. The experiences that actually bring together human people are the experiences where you actually get to have an exchange with the other participants. I think that the next frontier and the ultimate frontier for sound would be working that direction too. To have people have an experience in a communal way. Everyone has their own personal experience, but then they can also share and bring people together, because I think that's what I get the most. That's what I like the most. So I think this can apply it also to other people.
Right. Anything else left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
Well, it's just a great community. It's a vibing community. It's great to make friends every year, to see the same people coming. They presenting new projects, to have exchange. No one knows where this is going. It's ever changing. And so keep it up with the ever changing, always amazing, and let the surprises come every year after year.
Awesome. Well, Max, thanks so much for sitting down to me to unpack a little bit more of the sound design behind both the 1968 as well as Earth to Come and some of your other previous projects. And yeah, just really excited to see where you continue to take this practice of spatial audio and some of the exhibitions that we're seeing here at Venice, but above and beyond in other locations around the world. So yeah, just really interested in seeing specifically where the future of spatial audio is going to take us in the future. And I think it makes a huge difference in some of these different projects. So yeah, thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you, Kent. And thank you for all the work you do for the community. Really appreciate that.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage, and hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals, and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also, it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it in, allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening. Thank you.